So how many of you guys have brothers and sisters? Anybody have brothers and sisters? All right, here's my next question. How many of you are the youngest brother or sister? All right, now, if you're a girl, put your hand down. All right, if you guys, all right, you guys who are the youngest brother in the family and have an older sister, keep your hand up. Older sister. All right, I'm talking to you. Now listen, you can put your hand down. I'm in the same boat. I grew up with an older sister. Hey, buddy, you can put your hand up. Anyway. I'm a little ADD, I'm sorry. I had an older sister growing up, and how many of you who had an older sister, like, you realize that your life's goal, like, God designed you to pick on her forever? Like, right? Isn't it awesome, Clay? We know you are the poster child of picking. Jess, where are Grace? Where are you guys? Does he pick on you? Does he do mean stuff to you? God made him to do that, though. He put him in your life for that reason. I firmly believe that. Like, I can't find it in the Bible, but I'm sure it's there somewhere. Well, I bet those of you who have brothers and sisters know what it's like probably to like mess with your brothers and sisters and know them really, really well. Because if you were anything like me, you grew up sticking gum like in their hair and like, right? And taking your sister's Barbie dolls and cutting all the hair off so it was like bald and looked like a Marine. It was awesome. Like, you guys do stuff like that? Shave her dog when she's not home. It's great. So I knew my sister really well like that. And I kind of, that was the basis of our relationship. And a few years ago, if you don't know my sister, she's like this martial artist girl. She actually teaches martial arts, right? And she goes to all these tournaments and she competes in them and she fights. And this one time I finally got to go see one of her tournaments. She invited me. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, there's my little sister. She's my big sister, but there's my sister out there. And she's like, I remember sticking stuff in her hair and messing with her. That's Chris. And then all of a sudden, as she's standing there waiting in her little gi and stuff, she's got a little black belt on. I see the shadow just like loom over my sister and like consume her in its darkness. And this, there are big girls, okay? But then there's like big girls, all right? This one wasn't either one. She was like a big girl, all right? Like, she was the Incredible Hulk on steroids that walked out here. And I was like, holy strong, huge muscled girl. Like, whoa, what happened? And there's my sister like, she's gonna kill you. He's like, don't stand there, run now. And I'm scared for my sister. And then, so all of a sudden, like, she stands there, she's like in her stance, and it's like, all right, boom, fight. And then they start fighting. Within a couple seconds, my sister, who was like half the size of this other chick, like grabs her, and I see this very large mound of flesh fly over her. The whole girl flies over her shoulder and lands in the mat. My sister pins her down, and I'm going, why was I ever mean to my sister? She's gonna kill me. You know, like all those things I ever did to her, like fleeted back into my mind. And I'm like, oh no. Like, my sister was not the same person that I remembered her being. Like, now she's scary because now she's gonna kill me and I know she can do it. But it was cool because in that moment that like fear was struck in my heart and I'm sitting there, I'm going, man, I never pictured my sister being like this, you know, like, it was almost like I knew her so well. You know, I grew up with her and I did jokes with her and I just goofed around with her for so long. I had just gotten used to my sister and I didn't realize how powerful she really was if she wanted to break my neck. You know what I'm saying? So like, I had a bad view of it. That day it cleared up. And the passage we're going to look at tonight, Jesus is kind of in that same boat where there's some people that should know better about who he is. Like, they should know him better than they do, but they may know him a little too well. And because they know him so well, they just don't quite get who he actually is. So after that slams, we're going to look at Mark 6. All right. Mark chapter 6, starting in verse 1. So you guys can peek there or on the screen. It'll be up there. Let's read it together. It says, he went away from there and came to his hometown, and his disciples followed him. And on the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished, saying, where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? And how are such mighty works done by his hands? Is not this the carpenter? The son of Mary and brother of James and Joses and Judas and Simon? And are not his sisters right here with us? And they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor, except in his hometown and among his relatives and in his own household. As he could do no mighty, and he could do no mighty work there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled, get this, because of their unbelief. And he went out about among the villages teaching. And here we have the story of Jesus, and we're continuing on with our story because we've seen his ministries take place, right? And he's been going out doing some awesome stuff. Can you guys name a few sweet things we've seen Jesus do up to this point? Calming this crazy storm that came up, right, as they're crossing over Galilee. What else did he do? Cast out this legion. There's like thousands of demons in this dude, and he sends it in the pigs, right? And then, no bacon, yeah?
Healed the dude from the roof.
Yeah, there's so many people crowded around Jesus, they had to drop the dude through a roof to get him down, and like, hey, Jesus, help him, you know? Like, there's a lot of people, we can't see you. What else did he do?
Water.
Randy. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, cast out legion.
Water into wine.
Yeah, he did not in up to here, but yeah, he did do that. Yeah.
He brought the little girl back to life.
Uh-huh. The Jairus' daughter. Yeah.
He healed the woman who touched his clothing.
Yeah, the woman who just touched like the hem of his garment was healed instantly. And like he did all this awesome stuff, and then it says he went away from there. Okay? He says, hey, I'm going home. Finally he heads home, and it says he came to his hometown. Now where's Jesus' hometown? Anybody know? How many think it's Bethlehem? No. Bethlehem, right? No, it's not. That was a trick question. He was born in Bethlehem, though, so you're kind of right. Where'd he grow up? Nazareth is where Jesus was from. Nazareth was about 20-something miles from the Sea of Galilee. It's 20 miles southwest of the Sea of Galilee. All right? I had it written down. I'm cheating. And so he goes home. Now, here's the deal. How many of you would like to go home and... Some of you are like, I want to go home right now because you're boring. Okay, sorry. Thanks. And all of a sudden you get home and you're like, man, I'm so offended by you, just the fact that you're here. Like, that's the reception that you get. Like, yay, great homecoming. Like, you've been away for all this time and you arrive at home and everybody's like, you're like, what? Like, where's the open arms? Where's the hug? That's Jesus. All right? He just came home. This is the worst homecoming ever. Jesus just comes home. And look what happens in verse 3. Well, first of all, let's not skip ahead. I'm jumping ahead here because I'm getting excited. It says, and his disciples followed him home. Now, why is that important? Anybody know any ideas? Why is this added in that his disciples followed him? Huh? I can't hear you. They could have just gone home. So what kind of like vow did they take when Jesus was like, hey, follow me? What did they do for Jesus? They left everything. They left everything. Some dudes, two of them, left their dad sitting in the boat, remember? He's like sitting there making a net. He's like, where y'all going? And they, they're just gone. He's like, sorry, dad, see ya. You know, like all these guys left things. They gave up everything to follow Jesus when he walked by and he's like, hey, Matthew, tax collector man, with all your money and influential friends, let's go. All right, throws his money down and follows Jesus. Like they're leaving everything behind. So at this point, no matter where they go, no matter how dangerous it is that the place that Jesus is going, they're there. Imagine if you got out of the boat with Jesus and this crazy, like, demon-possessed dude with legion who's cutting himself and running all over the place runs up at you guys. Scary, right? It's freaky. And they're right there next to Jesus. They're following him anywhere. Now they follow him into another dangerous place. And you're going to see why. You're like, it's Jesus' home. Yeah. Well, you'll see in a minute. And they still follow. Now listen, before we just go, oh yeah, cool, good job, disciples, stop for a minute. Because as we have been called to follow Christ and Jesus comes to each of us and says, hey, follow me, that's the commitment that we made when we accepted Christ. Jesus, I'll give it all up for you. I surrender. I give you my heart, which means you're my king. Tell me what to do. If you want me to go wherever it is, I'll go. If you want me to stay, I'll stay right here, but I want to do what you tell me. That's where these disciples are, and I just pray that over us. Now, that's a daily prayer, is that we can all be like, hey, we're disciples of Christ, which means Jesus, wherever you go, I'm following. And so they do. They follow him home. And look at verse 2. It says, and on the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue. Now, a couple things we need to remember here is that he said something about the Sabbath earlier, didn't he? You guys remember what he said? A couple passages back? Yeah. The Sabbath was made for man, not the man for Sabbath, which we were like, hey, Jesus is even Lord of the Sabbath itself. But here it says, and let me read you another place it says it. Luke 4:16, and he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and as was his custom, he customarily did this. Like, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day. Jesus, who is Lord of the Sabbath, and actually beats the Pharisees down when he's like, hey, listen, don't try to throw this on me. Don't try to use religion and like make it this thing that we're going to worship instead of Jesus, instead of the Son of God. He himself still follows the Sabbath. Now, we need to be really careful as we look at a gospel life and being believers and followers of Christ. It doesn't mean we're just going to be rebels. Jesus was a rebel, man. He didn't follow rules. He threw them all on the ground, right? Throw them on the ground, whatever that song is. Anyway, that sings it all. Like, he didn't do that. Jesus actually did. Why? Because he knows that the things that God set up for us are good for us. As long as they're observed in the right way with the heart of Christ behind it. Not as some legalistic rule, but not as a way for us just to be radical rebels just to do it. Because we love Christ with all our hearts and we just want to follow like these disciples did. So here's Sabbath. Jesus is observing it. He goes into the synagogue and he teaches. Now, anyone know what Jesus actually taught when he's in here? It doesn't say it in this passage here in this gospel, but it says it in another gospel. Anyone know what his little sermon was when he got up and read? And he was really, really smarty pants. Oh, there's two of them. About himself. Do you know what he taught from? From Isaiah, prophecy from Isaiah. Good, that was a tag team, all three of those, perfect. He taught about himself. He opens the Bible, he reads this prophecy in Isaiah, which was written thousands of years before him, and then all of a sudden, he's like, hey, that's me. This prophecy is being fulfilled as I'm standing in front of you, that's me. And all these people are like, what? Look what it says they did in response. And many who heard him were astonished. Like, what? We've never heard anything like this. But it's more than just, hey, he said some really cool words that like tickled my ears, Matt. He actually like, this guy, you're just giving me all sorts of lines tonight. This guy, listen, he did something more than just teach. He backed up his teaching with power. He walked around healing people in the name of God. He was casting out demons in the name of God. He was bringing storms to a calm in the name of God, showing his power. Why? To take those words that he was saying in this teaching and to seal it. Because as people saw the power that he had and the things that he could do, they were like, wow, what he's saying must be true because look at what he's doing. Look at the power God's giving him. So as these people sat there and they had heard about his reputation and they heard these words, they're astonished and they're like, what? Now here's something we got to notice. First of all, where did he go when he went in the city? Did you catch it? To the synagogue. Where does he usually go? What usually happens the second he gets somewhere? People flocking around him. Remember people had to drop people through roofs because they couldn't get close enough and they had to go to seashores because they didn't have enough space or out in the desert. Doesn't happen here. He walks into this town and nobody's flocking to Jesus. Wait a minute, isn't this his hometown? It'd be the best homecoming game if you guys like came out on the field and the stands are empty. Cricket, cricket. Oh, where's everybody? We're going to play our game. You know, like, it'd be horrible. Here comes Jesus. He's coming home. The people that should love him the most and know him the best, and there's nobody there. It's an empty stadium. What? And it's Sabbath, so where are they? Jesus knows it's Sabbath. They're going to be in the synagogue, and he heads over to the synagogue. He actually has to go find them, and he walks into the synagogue where they're at because they're not looking for him. They're not interested in finding Jesus. His own home. These people that saw Jesus grow up as a little kid running around with a little snotty nose and like pull girls' hair. I don't know if he did that, but like whatever, running through the sprinklers in the front yard. That same Jesus that they saw grow up, that lived down the road. And they don't care that he's home. Not like these other towns. So he goes into the synagogue and he preaches and he leaves them absolutely astonished. Like, whoa, what did he just say? But I don't know if it's the same astonishment as we're thinking as these other people had. Let's look at it. This is what they said in response. Saying, where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? Like they're acknowledging that what he's saying is wise. It's not his. You know why? Because this dude has the same education as me. I went to school with him. He's got a hometown education. He had Miss Backerschmager, or whatever her name is, and she was a horrible teacher. I know, because I was in her class. Where did he learn this? You know, like, I know this, Jesus. I saw him grow up. I grew up next to him. Where did he get these things? Where did this wisdom that he has come from? But you know what they acknowledge? That it was wisdom. that it was something that none of them could grasp, and it was bigger and more true than anything they knew, and they could admit that, you know? They couldn't deny that fact. And then they say something else. They say, how are such mighty works done by his hands? They're acknowledging the fact that what he did is real, that these miracles he performed are powerful, and they're more than anyone in that room could have done. But how could this guy do it? How could little Jesus from down the street do this? They couldn't deny that it was true, but they couldn't admit it either. They couldn't accept him for who he was. Now, we've seen some different things here, and here he gives them proof. He gives them wisdom, the wisdom of the gospel, what they need to hear. You know, the cool thing is that if you've been to this place, you have heard the gospel, I guarantee it. Whether it's from the stage here, whoever's preached that night, I'm sure they share the gospel with you because we do that here. Or if you sat with a leader, I'm sure they've shared the gospel. Or friends that you have in here, we are about the gospel in this place. And I love that. So if you're here, you've heard the gospel like these people, but they've also seen these powerful miracles he's done. They have all the proof in the world that they need, but they can't accept it. They're looking at him going, I know it's true, but I just can't believe you did it because I know you too well. I don't know there's anything about you. I've never seen you sin. I've never seen you break your testimony. I've never seen, all I've seen is good stuff, but you know what? I still can't get my heart around it to believe it. And it's weird because as we've looked through this life of Jesus and all the awesome things he's done, remember the different responses the people have had as they've seen these proofs? Like, for instance, when he healed that guy with legion, what was his response? Jesus does this, speaks this truth and does this miracle, and this guy responds how? I believe you. It's faith. Like, let me follow you. I believe that you are the Son of God. Then you have other people, like the ones who are like, hey, we just saw you heal this guy and kill our pigs. We believe you. You know, we have faith, but we want you out. Those are the people that are like, I believe you're God, but you know what? I don't want you in authority over me. Like, get away. Like, I can't have you in my life. So you believe, you just reject. Now we see a different breed of person. The third choice is this, that you could be that person like they are and go, hey, I see it all clearly in front of me, but I can't believe it all. You know what it comes down to? This thing that we've been talking over the last couple weeks here, faith. It comes down to faith. Because each of us, if you're sitting in this room tonight, have had the gospel clearly presented to you. You can look around you and see the power of God. As Paul tells us in Romans, like, we can see he's real in his power, and we've heard the words of the gospel. And as you sit here tonight, you're faced with a choice. Will you believe? Will you believe but say, hey, I don't want you? Or are you just going to reject completely? Say, I can't wrap my heart around that. And that's the boat that these people are in tonight. And the sad part is, it's his own home. And then it says, this is their next thing they say to him. Is not this the carpenter? Now, what did Jesus' dad do? Anybody know what Joseph did? Carpenter. He was a carpenter. So he's kind of talking about this like family tradition, this family line. Carpenter wasn't necessarily like working with wood. It was a builder. A lot of times in that area, they actually built with like stones, would stack stones up and make homes and things like that. So Jesus was a builder, which is why a lot of the analogies and the stories he uses are about buildings, right? Because that's what he did as a trade. And so these people are going, I know your dad. Like, your dad's, he's a carpenter. He's not a king. Jesus, you're standing here and you're trying to tell us that you're the king, that you are the king of the universe. You're the Messiah coming back to just take everything over as the king, and yet you come from a carpenter? You're a carpenter, not a king. And see, they just can't wrap themselves around the person of who Jesus is. And then they say this next. They say, his lineage, right? The son of Mary. Like that Mary right down there who lives in that house. The brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon. Are not his sisters right here with us? Like, look at your family. You're not from some first class, like top notch social family that's like everybody respects. You're not from some kingly bloodline. You are just Jesus from down the road. We know you real well. And here you come and tell us you're the king. You're not a king, Jesus. You're just a carpenter from a poor family in our town. Some people might be like, hey, listen, well, what if they hadn't known him? Like, that's not fair. Like, these people knew him. That's not a very fair situation. What if they hadn't known him at all? What if he just dropped straight from heaven and nobody knew his background or where he was from? It might have been easier for them to believe, right? Well, let's take a look at some other people that that actually happened to. John 9:29. They say this. They say, we know that God has spoken to Moses. Like, we can believe in Moses. But as for this man, Jesus, we don't know where he comes from. Like, we can't believe this guy. We don't know him. See, it comes down to this. Your heart and my heart is full of pride. And we love to make excuses. And when we're faced with a decision like this, where Jesus clearly reaches out to you and says, look, I want to forgive you. I want to change your life. You're faced with a choice and your pride can get in the way. Like these people, like so many people. As Jesus reaches out and is like, look, I'm offering you salvation. All you got to do is accept it. Our pride tends to get in the way and we go, no, I don't know who you are. Or we say, hey, I know you too well. I got you figured out. And then we miss out on all of salvation. Look what it says next. Their reaction is this. They took offense at him. You know, they took so much offense because of what he said. If we look in Luke again, 4:29, this is what they actually did in response to what Jesus says. This is how much offense they took. And they rose up and drove him out of the town and brought him to the brow of the hill on which their town was built. Look what happens. So that they could throw him down the cliff. They grab him, they pull him out of the synagogue, they drag him to this cliff, and they're standing over the side and they're trying to literally push him off a cliff and kill him for what he did. This same Jesus. Same Jesus who kicked the ball around in their front yard. This Jesus they have hanging over the side of a cliff to kill him. Now, if you know the rest of the story, he's too powerful. He passes right through the crowd and they can't do it. But look at the offense that they took to him. How could they hate him so much? How could they hate this guy so much? This Jesus who comes and says, I gave up heaven for you. I stubbed my toe like you stubbed your toe and had snotty noses like you. And I had to put up with having a cough and a cold just like you and all the other things of life I dealt with just like you. I gave all that up to be here. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be nailed to a cross and die. I'm going to conquer death and pay the penalty of all sin for you. And that guy, they took so much offense to, they wanted to throw him off a cliff. How do you respond when that same Jesus who's done all that for you reaches out and says, will you accept me? I love you. I pray that we don't respond with that offense. That we're not like these people. It's like, get out of here, Jesus. Just can't wrap my heart around it. But that we can open our arms and say, thank you for saving me. It's time. Like, I'm on my knees now before you. I want to surrender, Jesus. But they took offense. And then it says, and Jesus said to them, now it's Jesus' turn. Are you ready for this? Here comes Jesus. He says, a prophet is not without honor. Like, I have honor everywhere I go. People flock to me because they can see the power of God in me. But look, except in his hometown. And he doesn't stop there. He says, and among his relatives. Oh, wait, I'm not going to stop there either. I'm going to hit one more. And in his own household, among his own family, he has no honor. How can you not believe? Do you just know me too well and you think you know me too well? You're just used to me like I was when I saw my sister down there. You surprised the heck out of me. I was like, yeah, it's just my sister. I stuck gum in her hair. You know, like, whoa, that's my sister. Some of us are looking at Jesus that way going, yeah, I'm used to him. Like, you're saved. You've surrendered your life to him. You believe in him. But right now, you're not like the disciples. You're not following. And you're just used to Jesus because you're used to hearing his name so much. and you're used to hearing the word gospel so much, and you're used to raising your hands in worship so much, and doing the church thing so much, and you can feel it maybe. You can even feel the way, like when we get together to pray, and it's just this draggy thing that people just say words. Just, yeah, there's that phrase again, you know. And maybe we've lost the real passion for who He truly is. We're not just going through the motions. It's a living, vibrant relationship that we have with the God of the universe. Don't forget who Jesus is. Don't get used to Jesus. Be getting to know Him more every day, so every day you wake up going, I love You so much. And you're like, Rob, are you saying I should never have bad days or I'm a bad Christian? I'm not saying that. Life is a struggle and it's movement and there's ebb and flow. And yes, I get it. Some days we just have horrible days. But you know what the key here is? That it's a relationship. It's alive. It's breathing. And there will be bad days. But you will always have Jesus. Some of us need to just say, hey, I know You too well almost. Like I'm too used to You, Jesus. I want to really know You. Show me who You really are. Like, I want to know Jesus better. You see the attitude in that? You see the difference in your heart as you're really looking for the King instead of just being like, yeah, I'm just doing my thing. Like, I really want to see You. Like the song that we sang. Man, Brandy sang that song for us. Like, I can't sing loud enough. I can't praise loud enough because I've seen who You are. My eyes have actually seen the real King and not this one that I just thought I saw growing up next to me, you know? I've seen Jesus. Let's not be like these people, like His own family that was just used to Him. And I see this awesome comparison. Does this remind you of anybody? Maybe King David? You know, they're looking at little Jesus going, I can't believe you're the King of the universe. And all these people, King David standing out there as a shepherd in a field, they're going, that can't be the King of Israel. Like, really? They chose him? That little scrawny shepherd boy? He smells like goats, you know, like him? Can't be the King? What a beautiful picture foreshadowing Jesus as He comes on the scene here and they're looking at Him going, Him? I saw Him grow up. And truly He is the King. So verse 5 says, the result of this is that He could do no mighty work there. He couldn't do anything big there. There weren't a whole lot of people coming to Him. People just didn't have faith. And so He couldn't do these miracles like in these other towns. It says, except that He laid hands on a few sick people and healed them. Even in the middle of this horrible place where people didn't believe, where they couldn't accept the truth about who He was, He still has the mercy on these people to find the few that do believe and heal them. He didn't just get up and say, forget you guys. Worst homecoming ever, I'm leaving. He still goes around and extends mercy and forgiveness and love if we choose to believe. You know, that's yours too. Don't think that's just for them. That's for you and me too. If you're here tonight and you're like, Rob, I seriously, like, I need to get back with Christ. I need to remember who He is, why I first accepted Him. Or maybe you're here tonight, you're like, hey, I've never met this guy. I need to know Him. Remember that this mercy is for you too. That He's coming and He wants to say, hey, look, I want to introduce myself to you. I'm the King of the universe. And you can bow at His feet and go, I love you. And so, last verse there, verse 6, it says, and He marveled. Now it's Jesus' turn. Remember the beginning? It says that they marveled when He talked, like they were astonished. Okay, do you remember almost every single story we've seen about Jesus after He did a miracle or something happened? What were the people's reaction? They were astonished. Like every time as people get in front of Jesus, they're astonished. And basically they're speechless and shocked is what that means. They're like, ugh, like I can't breathe because what just happened? These people hear Him say that and they're like, oh, but in a bad way, you know? And so Jesus now is taking His turn at the end when He sees just how little faith these people have, that they can't believe in Him, that they know Him and should know Him better than anyone else, and they can't believe. So Jesus now takes His reaction. And you know what it is? Astonishment. Like, you? You? That I've reached out so much to? You that I've spent so much time with? You that I love so much, you can't believe in me? And He's left speechless. And so you know what He does? End of that verse, it says, and He went about among the villages teaching. What was that last verse, that word I read there? teaching. Why is that so important? Huh? Could have just left. Why do you think they throw that in here that he was teaching at the end of this thing? You know, like, it could have been enough to end there, and then he's like, but this is what Jesus went to do. He didn't just stop. He didn't just give up. He didn't say, I'm out of here going to heaven. He goes around and he teaches. Why? What do you guys think? What did he come to do?
So they would at least know and reject instead of not ever having a chance of accepting.
Yeah. Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. And so his mission here is the same mission he's given us now that he's gone. And he's waiting for us in heaven. We have been given that mission of going to do what he just did and he's doing there. He's teaching. And you know what he's teaching? What is it? Who knows? What's he going to teach these people? Math? Science? The gospel. Look, I'm going to do to you what I did in junior high. And this isn't personal against you. They're like, not the gospel. The gospel! Woohoo! The gospel! The good news! Right? Not the gospel. And I do that too. Like, yeah, it's the gospel. No, it's not. It's the gospel. This is awesome news. Remember how good this is? He's been setting up his authority of who he is, passage after passage, to show us this good news. We need to look at it as good news and stop sitting there being like, I know this so well. It's the gospel. That's the whole point. We need to be like, you're Jesus. You died for me and I don't deserve it. I want to live for the gospel because it's awesome news that I'm not going to have to go to hell, that you have saved me when I don't deserve it. That is great news. And you know what? That's the news he called every single one of you, if you believe in Christ, to go share. Go share it. Go do what Jesus did and go teach. Go make disciples. Remember, who's your five? You got your five? You sharing the good news with them? Some of you guys have been going to the back making decisions over the last couple weeks and you've been praying together and you've been standing up to do things. Don't let it be some, just forgive me for saying this, but lame moment of emotion. I pray that that's not what it is for you. But we don't want some emotional reaction in this place. We want people that say, I truly love this King. And when I stand up to tell him I'm going to follow. Follow through. And go share your faith. Will you pray with me? Jesus, thank you. Thank you. Oh God, we don't deserve your gospel. We don't deserve your Son. The blood of God should never have been shed for us, but you chose to. You love us that much. Thank you. God, awaken us to who you really are and don't ever let us be so used to you that we forget, but wake us up every day knowing that Jesus Christ is a Son of God and he has saved us. Father, I pray for every person in this room, Lord, if there are people that don't know you, God, that they would come speak to a leader after this or me, Father, that we could share this awesome news with them. And those of us who are here tonight, we do believe God strengthen us. God, give us a passion for your gospel that is steady and true because we're depending on the power of Jesus Christ, the creator of the universe, to live for you. We love you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.